Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are in the iTunes, or you're looking through the iTunes search engine. If you enter Warman Kickfighting Show, the podcast pops right up. And if you're wondering, Lord Gaul was my username when I fell in love with the sport, when I was on K1 Fans, K1 USA, Cockatoogie, and so on. So, got a lot to talk about, a lot of results. We are in. Tis the kickboxing season, because we got a lot of stuff going on. Like every week, we've been pushing it pretty good. We've got, you know, Glory, Infusion, K1. It's just, we've been getting a lot of kickboxing. So I'll go ahead and jump into a lot of the results. I'll go ahead and start with the results from Friday in Japan, where we had the K1 Japan Grand Prix for the 65kg weight class. Not the World Grand Prix, but their 65 Japan Grand Prix. For those who are wondering, back in the day, K1 used to have a K1 Heavyweight Grand Prix that just had Japanese fighters in it. For the most part, it was fighters like, you know, Musashi winning it. But here and there, you know, they'd throw a Bob Sapp in, Bob Sapp would win. And then, of course, for those who follow the Max, it was always a really big one for them to have the Japan one. Usually kicked off the K1 Max season where they would have Kohiro Maki won them a lot. I think Masato only won the first one. But other than that, Kohiro Maki would be in, like, all of them. So, like, he's a big one. I want to say Yoshihiro Sato won one of those. It's a big thing. They decide to return and do that again for the weight class that they're strongest in, I'd say, at 65kgs. And they had some notable names. Some, you know, maybe one person on the card wasn't based out in that bracket wasn't based out of Japan. But I do think it's full. Now, I look at it again, unless you want to say Minoru doesn't count. But I do think that he would count in being, you know, Japanese-based. Going to go ahead and go through the tournament field as we have Hideki Yamazaki winning the whole thing. But this is something about tournaments, and it'll be a theme. You'll hear me talk about it a little bit as I go through this show. The reason why we love and hate tournaments at the same time is the attrition, because sometimes it comes down to the luck of the draw. Sometimes it comes down to how much effort your opponent puts in the first round. It really is based off of who's in front of you throughout the tournament bracket. And sometimes you could win quickly but still get injured. There is an attrition thing to this. It demands a lot of you, which is why we, you know, look back historically and go, man, some of these guys won K1 tournaments where they just kind of went through the lion's den, and some guys had a little bit easier run. People used to jump on Remy Bojowski because he had his first, you know, title run was, they perceived it easier. His second run might have been one of the tougher K1 World Grand Prix to ever win based on how many total rounds that he put in. But some people just say, hey, that was a weaker field. They jump on you about that sort of thing. There's nothing you can do there. It is tough to beat who's in front of you. And if you're in a tournament field that's got the best in the world, this is going to be reflected in how you perform. Like, it's going to show up in how much you can go out there and compete well and then move on to the next level and compete well again. This tournament is an example of that. So you always credit the person who comes out on top here, but at the same time, you always wonder what would have been if they had met in a single match. Nevertheless, kickboxing tournaments aren't going anywhere. I love them, and I'm glad that I'm talking about this one. First fight on the card was Masaki Nori as he defeats Minoru. We've talked about this guy before, Minoru before. This first round stoppage is an example of why Masaki Nori is just so talented. He is, he's got his own style about him, how he plays with the low kicks, how he plays that high guard. He rips the body well, and he's got this, some of the sneakiest step-up knees in the business. Like, his step knees, they just come up so clean through the guard. He reads things really, really well as far as when's the moment to let this thing go, and he catches people in exchanges. It started off with him just peppering away with low kicks quick because he's so fast twitch. Scoring to the outside and inside leg of Kimura. And Kimura, looking for opportunities, you know, he did a leap hook that was blocked, and he just kind of stood in front of Nori for a while before they started to add up and they started to hurt. And I think that's where he was like, all right, this isn't going to do. I'm going to have to start letting these hands go. I'm going to have to start being offensive because I can't just play this counter kick game with him. And based on how K1 scores things. He's throwing in bunches, and I don't think everything's getting through, but he started to mix it up. Threes and fours, he started to throw some combinations. Norris stayed patient the whole time, and then after he landed some shots, Norris started to walk him down, and I think it sent the message to Minoru that, okay, this guy, he's not going away when I hit him with my shots. He walked him down, he threw a switch kick to the body, ripped the left hook to the body, and then he did a step-up knee the moment the right elbow started to commit to the side of that body. I believe I'm remembering that exchange correctly. But the step-up knee comes through, lands clean in the jaw. Minoru goes down. Then and you had seen even before that body exchange happened, you could see that he was hurt to the body by some of the work of Nori earlier in the round. After the standing eight, there's about 20 seconds, 15 seconds left to close the show. This is what makes elite guys elite in tournament play. If you've got that gap, you got to try to get a guy out of there. That's a 15-second sprint. You got to try to get that second down so you can move on without as much damage. Nori comes in, throws some shots, scores a bunch of knees in a clinch. Minoru tried to throw out of it, you know, with those big shots. But again, his legs were hurt, body was hurt, didn't have as much sting on it. After a straight right and then a knee to the body, he went down a second time and Nori moved on. Great performance by Masaki Nori. Minoru, of course, scoring through it. He's a guy who they promote heavily. They like his style. They like his image. He's, you know, kind of got the, you know, this plays with a bad boy type image, you know, tough guy type image. At the same time, girls seem to like him, kind of got that kind of look, speaks Japanese fluently, been out in Japan for a long time. He got the KO pop. He's run into a couple of walls. He just got stopped by the champion, Kufertex, and then he was stopped here in the first round. So he's going to have to do some bouncing back. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Horoya versus Terasaki Naoki. Absolute bull rush job. Horoya came out there. His kickboxing was on point. Combinations, the low kick to start. He ripped the body, came with a head kick over the top. Naoki, like, stumbled but didn't go down. He put the hands together and finished it off with an overhand right. Horoya brought the violence. Like, he was not playing round one. If you got the opportunity to get your guy out of there, get your guy out of there. And Horoya, he's getting better all the time. I've mentioned to him several times on the show. Horoya is a guy who, you know, he had a little bit, you know, tougher start when he got to K1 because of how he's promoted as a kid. But he brought the violence here. Big time KO, first round, bulldozing job. Next fight, and I guess a somewhat upset based on, you know, Soda's history, but Hideki Yamazaki gets a victory over Soda Yasomi. I would pick Soda to win that fight. I definitely, you know, think that Yamazaki, there are moments where I like him and there are moments where I don't. He doesn't have the cleanest of kickboxing flow to me. Sometimes he just plays with some spinning stuff over and over and gets a little bit wild. Doesn't really have the clean kickboxing exchanges that I usually favor. But he, you know, he did a good job here where he, scored a, I think it was like an uppercut to hook finish. I can't remember exactly that fight, but I remember that, you know, he had scored some shots with his hands, got him in trouble, scored the KO in the second round, and he moves on relatively, you know, didn't really take much damage from the fight, which is always big, but Hideki moves on into the tournament. Next up was Yudakubo versus Nomon. Yudakubo is an example of a guy who it's like, man, it was 2 years ago that he beat Masaki Nori to win the Glory Championship. Masaki Nori, matter of fact, I think it was 3 years ago. Masaki Nori is like 18, 19 years old when that fight happens. Yudakubo is the guy. He's young himself, but he had a slick step box style. He had very southpaw, had a lot of similar things that he did to Georgia Petrosian. Not saying he's Georgia Petrosian, but if you were to watch some of those fights, the way he played with his step back and the way he ran people in the offense and the way he had subtle way of getting away from strikes, he showed that a lot. Then all of a sudden, he just hit a wall, and he just started, you know, losing the guys that he shouldn't have been losing to, or at least could have put up better efforts with. And he once was considered the number one person in the world at the weight class. It's significantly down. Still competitive, but not where he was. He comes out there, and as I mentioned, when Nori had his guy in trouble, he got him out of there. When Haroya got his guy in trouble, he got him out of there. Unicoba came out, put his hands down, started playing a little bit with Noman, and I was like, dude, you can't do that. You gotta, if you feel like you're superior to your guy in a tournament, try to get them out of there. Try to land the shots to get him out of there. And he started off kind of playing for a little bit, about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Then he started to build on kickboxing and body work. The fight was never in doubt. Noman had a couple opportunities where he let his hands go and tried to get back into it. But just for a brief periods of time, it was all Unicuba. But it was one of those things where it's like, if you had put your foot on the gas just a little bit, or if you had started that body work, if you had come out round one, first minute of it, and said, hey, I'm going to send the message that I'm a superior fighter, and it seems like a better idea for you to call it a night than for you to try to fight me back for the next three rounds, go ahead and send that message, because that's very important in tournaments. Didn't happen here, but Kubo gets the victory and moves on. Semifinals. This would have been a fight of the year had it not been for another candidate a week ago. But Masaki Nori comes out, really puts on a kickboxing, you know, scoring the low kicks movement. He scores really well against Haroya in round one. Step up knees, doing his body work. Then Haroya just decides to bite down and just throw hands in round two. And, you know, after Nori is having success. Nori drops Haroya, I want to say early in round two. And then Haroya gets up and just starts letting them hands go. Like, he's just throwing, you know, one, twos, three, twos. Just a series where he would just throw one, two, one, two, one, two. Just letting his hands go. And Nori was taking a lot of it on the gloves, but he's also getting hit with a lot of it, too. Haroya just decided that, hey, my chance is to let these things go. The way to beat Masaki Nori is you got to have the volume, because he's going to stay behind the earmuffs. He's going to look for certain shots. So if I can volume my way back into this, that's what I'm going to do. He just started throwing some huge shots. Then Nora would come back. Then Haroya would come back. Round two comes to an end. Probably one of the best rounds of the year. Going to round three. Round three, Saki Nori starts off kickboxing well. Haroya comes back. Just back and forth, where one guy would just throw heat. And then, you know, in his break, the other guy would take over. When Nori did his, he more had more of a combination kick flow that also had step-up knees and jumping kicks here and there. Haroya threw a low kick here and there, but mostly he just tried to do it with hand volume. When they went to the cards, the majority decision had one a draw, because that's how they get down in K1. If they feel like it's, you know, wasn't decisive in some of the rounds, they'll call it a draw. I believe that judge only had a decisive round in the second, giving it a, I think he had a 10-9 for Nori, despite the fact that Nori scored the down. Favorite Haroya's work for the rest of the round. I think making it a 10-9 or 9-8, however you want to do that. And the other judges had, I think, rounds three and one even, making those majority draws. So I can't remember the scorecards exactly, but I do remember the call was one draw, and then two giving it to Masaki Nori. So forgive me for the confusion. That's what it was. One draw, two for Masaki Nori, because of the down that he scored, because of the work he did in the first round. I could see them calling round three even. Good work for Nori. But on Haroya, this is a guy who I promote all the time, because he's such an interesting story in the history of kickboxing. This kid was once pushed to be the next Masato. They started, you know, hyping him up, talking about his style when he was a young guy. Koshin was created because of it, this league where they were going to bring up the next young star. And again, Koshin produced a lot of young stars. Masaki Nori was, that's where I fell in love with him. I saw him in that tournament. They used to put on these YouTube videos and they'd show you just, I mean, they're all wearing headgear, but Masaki Nori was one of those stars. Koyorube was one of those stars. And it's like, Haroya was pushed at a very young age, 17, 16 years old, to be the next guy to take over from Masato, which is a hard thing to ask of anybody. And because he was forced on the people, they started to hate him. Like, they didn't know what he was doing. I remember a friend of mine went to a K1 event, and in that event, Haroya was in this exhibition kickboxing match with Masato. And it was, you know, I remember they just kind of made this thing about it. They're going to put headgear in Masato, and then he decided not to take it right when the match started, because this was a kid. And they were kind of, I think they were trying to, you know, make it a passing of the guard sort of thing, but everybody hated it. And, you know, my friend who was at the event that night, he was, you know, hanging with this girl, and then the girl's like, man, what are they doing with this kid? And he started off with that type of reputation. Then he starts traveling and training a lot in Thailand, getting his resume built up, started fighting Max Muay Thai, started fighting, you know, a lot in K1 once he moved to the smaller weight classes. They started to realize, you know what, this kid's all right. We'll keep using him. And Heroya started putting on some really good performances. Despite the fact that he lost, he put on probably one of the best fighting performances of his career. And you could see that what they were seeing in him early, some of it's starting to catch up. Some of it's starting to come true. But when he puts it together, when he, like, blows a guy out, he looks fantastic. But he's one of the more interesting stories in kickboxing. He may not ever be the best in the world at that weight class, but this performance and some of the performances he's had in the last 2 years have shown that he's fully overcome the kid that people used to hate that was being forced on them. He really is a solid talent in kickboxing. Despite that, Masaaki Nori is an exceptional talent in kickboxing. But if there's one thing that I took from this fight, I was like, there's no way Nori's moving on to win the final fight. It's just how tournaments work out. They were so back and forth. So much was taken out of him in the second round fight. And then that's the game, you know. Nori has gotten to finals before in tournaments. And you could see it's the work that he took in the earlier fights to get him there that kept him from getting his hand raised. And after you see the fight with Heroya, you're like, there's no way this guy's going to do it. We move on to Hideki Yamazaki getting a victory over Yuta Kubo. Yuta Kubo started off nice, scored the down in the first round. Everything's looking good, scoring his hands. Then all of a sudden, he gets hit, and his eye starts to close. I believe it's his left eye. Starts to close up, and he's starting to push through. He's starting to get hit with a little bit more. And then all of a sudden he goes back. He's probably up after the second round. And, you know, that you could see they're thinking about stopping it. You could see he could barely see out of the eye. I don't know if he would have been able to continue the tournament anyways. But then he goes out there, and Yamazaki decides that he's going to start attacking the eye. And the way he attacked it, which is really, really smart, is he played with kind of a variation of an axe kick where it's you see the karate style guys play with it, you know, I forget the exact name for it off the fly, but basically he would use his lead leg, he'd swing it like an axe kick, but he'd more flick out at the knee on the very end as opposed to bringing the heel down. And he scored it, and I know as a fact that Kubo didn't see it. So when it first scored and it dropped Kubo, you know, now the fight's probably even on the cards if they call the second round even. I thought that Kubo may have edged it, but I could definitely make an argument for Yamazaki there. So then Yamazaki continues to work, continues to look for the KO because he knows that Kubo can't see. Kubo keeps doing a good job of evading. There was a period of time where Kubo just played all defense and made Yamazaki miss, and he really did look like, you know, some boxer schooling some new guy coming into the gym. He played with things, and he did a lot of things, a lot of scores in that way. Then all of a sudden, at the very, you know, towards the end of the round, I think maybe 15 seconds, he gets the same kick up there again, and it drops Kubo. And again, it just, he couldn't see it. I just think he can't. That eye closed up. Yamazaki moves on. But most importantly, Yamazaki moved on without taking a lot of damage, because there was a round and a half where Yuta Kubo just played movement and just tried to, you know, get himself out of the, you know, fight and score, but just get away from offense as much as possible, not look to be in exchanges because he couldn't see. They move on to the finals. Yamazaki gets Masaaki Nori in front of him. And Masaaki Nori started to do some good work with the low kick late. But I think the difference of the fight happened in the second round when Yamazaki had a moment where he, like Heroya, just started selling out on throwing hands. Started selling out. Again, he started to play with those kicks and stuff earlier. But he had a barrage where I want to say he threw like 12, 13 shots. And it's the kind of thing that you remember in a round. And that was big for him, clearly giving him round two. And then round one, there was good offense back and forth. But again, Nori just didn't have the activity. And activity even less when you consider that he came in, you know, so tired from the earlier fights. They get to the round three. And in round three, Nori's starting to do some work with the low kick. It's starting to slow Yamazaki down. Yamazaki's still looking for barrages of offense with his hands here and there. They go to the cards. One judge saw it as a draw, seeing that Nori's work in the third gave him that round. And then calling one round even, and then one round to Yamazaki the second. But the other two gave two rounds to Yamazaki. And that's what made him the K-1 Grand Prix Japan champion. So as we move forward, expect to see Yamazaki, who I still don't feel he's the most skilled of guys. I think in a one-night fight, Nori beats him. Heroya can beat him. Kubo, I think, could get him, you know, if it's just straight up, you know, one-night fight. I pick a lot of guys over him, not to mention, I could see him having trouble with the style of a Minoru, or even clearly nothing close to Fairtex, and then Glunder would give him trouble, of course. But he did a good job of the tournament went his way. He got stoppages, and that matters. You know, he got a stoppage, and I mean, it's weird to say it, but he got a stoppage in two fights, so he just had to get a decision in the last one. Being done before the time limit matters. Now, he fought most of that second fight, but stoppages, they matter. They matter, they help, confidence-wise, they help you. So he goes out there, puts on a performance, gets his hands raised. He'll be in the tournament. Also expect to see a lot of names that were in this tournament that will be in the 65kg tournament. Don't feel like this excluded anybody. 100% expect to see Masaki Nori. 100% expect to see Komaru Minoru. Expect to see these guys despite it. Yuta Kubo is the on-the-fence guy. I don't know if they're going to use him again. But I would expect to see the semifinal guys all be in the tournament field no matter what. So good stuff. Really enjoyed it. Solid tournament. And we'll go ahead and move forward on the card. We had a... I'm not going to bring them. There was a... Hirano Yu gets a pretty much forgettable decision over Koetsu. I just bring it up because you might see Hirano against, you know, in their 70kg field. Not exceptional fight. Pretty forgettable. Uehiro Makoto gets a fight that probably shouldn't have even happened at all in the heavyweight division as he gets a victory by KO over Nori. Just went out there and just kind of threw offense, scored overhand rights until he got to KO. I believe he scored three downs in the first round, but Nori actually offered nothing on the feet in that fight. And I say on the feet in a kickboxing fight, so you know he offered nothing. The surprise fight of the card was Johannes Wolf as he gets a victory over 60kg champion Hirotaka Urabe. Hiro is, I mean... The thing that made this one weird was Wolf comes out, he plays a more karate style. He has the same kind of bounce. He plays with a lot of push kicks, axe kicks, spinning hook kicks. But most importantly, he plays with the bounce. That's the most important thing you got to get used to when you go against those Thai style or those karate style guys that hop back and forth. Their hands usually don't come up for playing defense. They can just usually get away with movement because they've been getting away with movement their whole life. But Wolf really came out there and really, I thought he won all three rounds pretty clear. It was a majority decision. One person called it a draw because Wolf's work is so touch. There was hardly ever any really significant shots landed. But Urabe, he allowed it to happen. He didn't put the pressure and the volume you need to shut that style off. He just kept playing in front of him thinking, oh, my combinations and kicks will come later. And it didn't. Wolf didn't give it to him. Kept moving, kept bouncing away, right kind of boxing, right time, right kind of movement, right time kick, and he just played it. Very forgettable decision. Wolf didn't perform in a way where, like, if you were in a crowd and you seen him for the first time, where you'd be like, man, I want to see this dude Wolf fight again. He did not give you that, but he did dominate the guy who is considered the best in the weight class at 60kgs. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward what they do with Wolf. I'm curious to see how Koyorube does with him. I think Koyo will offer more offense. He's a good guy to add to a weight class that needs more athletes. So good stuff here by Wolf. We'll see what happens with Hiro moving forward because it really was a forgettable fight, forgettable performance by him. And Wolf, though he got the victory, it's something that we'll see. I mean, K1's gonna use him again because he got the win, you know. So they're gonna bring him back and see if they can put him against some other guys. But you're gonna have to bring the fight to this guy. If you let him play that style, he'll pick you off and move all fight. We go to the 65kg champion as Ku Fairtex gets a split decision victory over Masaru Glunder. Masaru brought the pressure. He really came out here to be the best fighter in the world. If he realized where he wasn't going to be able to play a technical game. He wasn't going to be able to be cool with a lot of kicks. So he played with kicks a little bit, but really he just kind of barraged in with hooks and wide shots to kind of get behind Fairtex's guard. Ku was able to move, land some counter shots, was able to score well throughout the fight. When it got to a decision, I could see that it made sense that it was that kind of close. Because Massaro did bring pressure, and he did score with the hooks here and there, but he threw enough hand offense for people, you know, because they love the boxing in K1, for a lot of the rounds to stay close. And Fairtex, because looking for counters, not really focusing on a low kick game, because he didn't put a blend of offense together where he clearly won the rounds, he played counter most of the fight. I can see the cards being close. I had a slight lean towards Fairtex, but I can see how Glunder thought that it was close, and when the cards were red and it was a split, you could see in his disappointment that he wanted it. He wanted to get this win. He knew what kind of fight he had to put on. I like that they're using Glunder. It's just so, what a crazy story. You know, crazy story. Gets brought in. Masaaki Nori beats him. He gets brought in to fight Masaaki Nori, and he beats Masaaki Nori. It moves on. He puts on a pretty good fight, just, you know, and drops Kamaru, who is a, you know, considered a star. Minoru is considered the star for them, and then Minoru comes back in the fight. It's just, he's found a niche and he's found a home, and I didn't know if he had the style or the looks to do it. And I'm really, really happy for him, and I hope they continue to use him. It's just good stuff. Good stuff, good effort in a losing cause. But it still was good work. And Fairtex continued to be the top of the mountain. You know, I thought that if Nori had won the tournament, they'd set that fight up. But maybe it'll happen before the year's over with. All I know is fun stuff from the Japanese card, the K1 card. I like the venue that they use. I just think it fits better for where they are right now as a company. So good stuff there. Let's go ahead and we'll go to Fusion next. And Fusion had a lot of fights that, you know, some close fights, some entertaining fights, some interesting results. It was their biggest event. They sold out immediately. I thought this was going to be for free, so I apologize, because they always have their fights for free. They decided to try to make this one a pay-per-view. It wasn't an expensive pay-per-view, but the fact that they flipped it on me, I wasn't ready for it. I thought it was going to be free that day. But anyways, starting off the top of the card, Serginio Canters loses to Yusin Beitar. It's weird because I mentioned before that I thought that Yasin was going to put up good effort, but I thought that he was going to lose because Canters throws heat. Canters really does sit on his shots. He throws big offense. But I thought Yasin's the type of guy who could get things going with his offensive flow to get a decision. And in the beginning, he just kind of played patient and didn't really throw a lot. His Canters kind of let his hands go, try to land the big shots behind the guard and so on. But then as the fight went on, Yasin got more active, and it helped that he had the Moroccan fan base there, because there's so many Moroccan people there to support Mohamed Jiraya, to support Nordin Benma. They pretty much had, you know, Tayfun Oskin. The best fighters on the card were of Moroccan descent. So the crowd, you know, was very in favor. You know, there were a few Serenese fans there, but the fan base was basically for the Moroccan fighters. So the anything Yasin scored weighed that heavier on the scorecards because it responded to the crowd. And the crowd, like, booed Canters as he came out, and they cheered Yasin as he came out. Yasin wins an extra round decision. Close fight. I'm fine with the decision. Canters is 19 years old. I still think he's got a huge, you know, future in the sport. It'll be fun to see how he develops. But that's what I really think that Infusion is going to be great at, developing young talent. And it's got to be said, and I'll have to get into the Badahari situation a little bit later, but the kickboxing events that have been happening in Holland lately, they have been selling out. Like, all of them. I've been following it, and another person's idea, this card's full. Like, that kind of stuff. It's crazy that they're selling out, kickboxing still doing so well. I remember when Ryan Scalia did a write-up for, he did a write-up on an 85-kg fighter from Poland. I can't remember the guy's name, but one of the questions he asked the guy about the rise of MMA in Europe, and then the guy said, MMA is more popular, or is growing in popularity in Europe. He said, but it will never replace kickboxing in Europe. And this is one of those things where it's like, yes, MMA is growing. More athletes are doing it and having success with it and so on. But not even close are these guys having the opportunity to, are these guys losing opportunities to grow? Because we're still producing guys who are like 18, 19, 20 years old who've got like 50, 60 fights. They're still getting opportunities to compete all the time. So you're going to see more of Cantor's. You're going to see more of Yacin. The opportunity for them to get the volume of work is going to be around for quite some time. So shout out to those guys. Samantha Van Doren gets a victory over Patricia Gabelli. And Gabelli's fought several times, fought for the promotion several times. Samantha Van Doren just got the kickboxing flow down a little bit more. Solid fight. Patricia seems, you know, satisfied with the opportunity. She posted the fight on her Facebook wall. Samantha Van Doren, there's a level of fighter that she can beat. Her win over Yona Wymans was probably, to me, that's going to be her statement win of her career, because that really was, when she fought against Iman Barlow, it was such a one-sided fight for Iman Barlow that it makes you say, okay, well, you know, go ahead and add, you know, some of the other women in the world, Nessa Maxson around that weight class. Samantha's going to struggle with those girls. But she's got kickboxing flow down. She's got a good chin. She's tough. And she got a hard-fought victory here. But I don't know. I mean, this might be her ceiling, is winning opportunities like this. But that win over Yona Wymans last year, that was big time for her. So congrats to her on this victory. And Patricia, I expect to see more of her. She's traveling Europe looking for fight opportunities. Just tough girl looking for opportunities, still fighting. She'll struggle against the elite too. But good show, and we'll see more of these women down the road. Going to go ahead and jump into the tournament field now. Norden Benmo versus Muhammad Jiraiya is probably the fight of the year already. Something crazy is going to have to beat these guys. Basically, it comes out with Jiraiya, comes out, opens up the hands. He's winning the kickboxing with volume. And then all of a sudden, he gets caught with a jumping knee at the end of round one, goes down. Right at the end of the round, they go back to the corner, crowd's cheering. It looks like Benmo, you've got to work really hard in the next two rounds to get that off the scorecard. Jiraiya starts that work. Round two, same thing. Landing punches and punches, looking for a combo flow. Not the long series of offense that he had in the past, because Benmo was looking to punch in between, but he really brought good, effective offense enough to win round two. Then round three starts, and then the insanity starts. Jiraiya comes out, starts landing big shots, gets a big right hand, drops Benmo. So Benmo goes down, crowd's going nuts because Jiraiya at minimum has evened it up on the cards, and he's got the round two in the bag. He could win, or at least he's earned an extra. Then, as he's going in, throwing hands, looking for the finish, Benmo explodes with a jumping knee. He'd landed the jumping knee a few times during the fight. Jiraiya just wasn't conscious of it while he's looking for his hands and his overhand shots. He drops Jiraiya big. The way Jiraiya goes down, you're like, this fight's over with. You know, he goes down. But he gets himself up to his feet, clearly not all there. Puts the earmuffs on. Benmo starts throwing offense again, looking for jumping knees again, still scoring offense. And then all of a sudden, a series of offense comes together. And then in the combination, a clean right hand comes through and just blitzes Benmo. And the thing that makes it such a great visual for K1 and as far as, or excuse me, for kickboxing, as far as when I think about my year in kickboxing, when I think about Infusion, what they put on, as Benmo goes down, his corner's watching him, and they just kind of like put their hands on their head in just disbelief that Jiraiya came back from the dead after their guy came back from the dead to get this KO victory. And the crowd is going absolutely nuts. It was just, it's special. You know, it's a special fight for me. I know when things are special, when I go to my Facebook wall and I've got all these friends from all over the world from doing the podcast, and I just go down the wall and a fight keeps popping up over and over. Not even good version of the fight popped up. Infusion had to put the version of the fight out for themselves so that they could get, you know, clearly the YouTube attention from putting out their product, but also so that people would have a good version of the fight to watch, because theirs came out smooth and beautiful because it's from their camera work. But man, it was such a special moment. The crowd was going nuts. Vinny Shoreman on the call made it all the better. You know, we've got him, you know, yelling and going crazy and, you know, just kind of making fights great. Him and Andrew Tate were the ones in the commentary team. But it was just a lot of fun. It was just a fun kickboxing moment. And to see so many people posted on the wall, see so many people say this was a war, that's what you want. And that's why you always talk about the Mike Zambides, you know, legendary fight. It's just, you keep seeing it. All of a sudden, I'll just be chilling, not knowing, you know, just kind of going down my Facebook wall. And then years after it's happened, I'll see Shahid Al-Haj versus Mike Zambides on someone's wall talking about, this was kickboxing war, this is great. This fight showed up on people's wall like that for like 3 or 4 days. It just kept popping up. I can go to my Facebook wall right now and go down and this fight's going to pop up again. It was that kind of a special. But it also told you that Jiraiya wasn't going to bring nothing to the next fight. Like, he just wouldn't have it. Tayfun Oskin goes out there, and clearly, again, it kind of comes down to the draw. And Jiraiya and Oskin were kind of joking because they thought they'd be fighting each other first. They thought they, you know, the tournament workout where they'd meet first. But Tayfun Oskin comes out there. He gets a Medike Kamara from France. And his opponent stopped on the stool after the second round of Tayfun Oskin bringing effective offense. So he goes out there and blows this guy out. Muhammad Jiraiya is in a war. When the fight starts, you can feel in the crowd that everybody knew that Jiraiya didn't have it. So there were some cheers for Oskin, but because Jiraiya didn't have the ability to throw offensive offense back, just a spot here and there, the moment wasn't what it could have been. It was still a lot of fun, you know, that Tayfun Oskin was able to get the victory back. But even as you're listening to Vinny Shorman on the commentary team, it was like this fight should have been done another day. But that's how tournaments happen. It's just, that's how it works. That's why we credit the attrition. That's why the seeding and all that matters. You know, it just worked out this way that Tayfun Oskin had the easier ride to a championship opportunity. Not that Kamara didn't try, just Oskin's just a better fighter than him. And Tayfun Oskin got a wounded man who was almost knocked out twice in his first fight, and he just kind of spent the round earmuffs up, throwing offense here and there. But after it was over with, like, it just didn't have that feel. Like, after the first fight between those two guys, when they're both, you know, healthy and so on, Oskin's like the crowd was into it. It was such an awesome fight, and the crowd went crazy for Jiraiya because it was a great back and forth. This fight was not a great back and forth. It was a clear 30-27 decision for Oskin, who, no fault of his own, pretty much it's almost forgotten that he won this tournament by the kickboxing world, because all anybody talks about was the offering of combat sports violence that we got in that first round, because it was beautiful stuff. It really, really was amazing. So go ahead and move on from that. Ibrahim El-Bustadi gets a third-round TKO over Patrick Fenriz. Ibrahim is again, he's being built. This is the kind of fight that moves him, the kind of fight that shows his skill set, kind of fight where he can, you know, was able to get a stoppage, you know, late in the fight. I like him. I want to see more from him. He's got to keep competing. I want him to be groomed into fighting in glory because he's around that weight class. I think that there's a lot of guys there he'd beat, no question about it. Like, I look at that field of fighters. He's got the build to, and there's some pretty tall guys at 85 kgs, but I look at who the glory roster has, and I mean, go ahead and put him against Dustin Jacoby. Let's see what that looks like. You know, there are some guys out there that he will really put some good kickboxing battles with. So I'm hoping to see it one day. Ilias Belaid gets a victory over Edson Fortis. I thought he's gonna get the stoppage, just a clear-cut victory for Ilias Belaid. Again, another solid, awesome performance. 67 kgs, is a little bit bigger. I want him to kind of stay around 65 kgs. I would love it if he got another opportunity in K1. I do not think it's going to happen with Glender because they're, you know, same gym. Or Blade's at a couple gyms, but Blade's with Mike's gym, and he's with another gym, I want to say. But, man, it's cool that he's getting fights, he's getting wins, and he's moving. But, man, he's got to get himself against the best in the world. So whether he goes into glory or whether he goes into, you know, and I would love to see him in, you know, glory against anybody from that stable. Varga would be a fun fight. You know, I'd like to see how he'd do with Varga. You know, it's Adamczyk. Again, might be the same gym, but, hey, Mike's gym has got a protocol for that. If it happens, Mike just sits in the back and their friends corner them out there. So I want to see Belaid start going against some of the better fighters in the world. I think this is the level of guy that he beats, so I want to really see him tested. I think one of the more interesting results on the card for me was the victory of Jafar Wilnis over Ismael Lazar. I really believe that Lazar wanted this one. I think that it was kind of vindication for the title that he had. It kind of represented the work that he's put into the sport. He's been getting KO victories. He had had, you know, he's got the Sam KO. I want to see, you know, so Sam, of course, who had fought Angler before. I think he wanted this because Jafar Wellness, as I mentioned before, liver kick got him top three in the world. He had that great run last year. Jafar Wellness has just turned into a really solid kickboxer, and it's hard to beat him with just overhands. Lazar's got a good low kick, but he doesn't play a combination low kick game. He'll just fire the single low kick by himself, and then he'll look for those big hands over the top. But Wellness stayed patient through it all, just stayed with steady kickboxing work throughout, and he is your new Infusion champion. A couple things happened from this victory. One, it gives validity to the Infusion Championship if Jafar Wellness is your champion. Why? Because he's considered a top five fighter in the world at heavyweight. So if you've got a top five fighter in the world carrying your title, there's value to it. Second, it means that Ismael Lazar, if he can turn things around, get that rematch, he could beat a guy who's in the top five. So he's got another opportunity, despite the fact that, you know, Wellness was successful here. Lazar really focusing on getting the weight down. Doesn't have to necessarily turn into a skinny guy, but just be less, you know. He's had performances where you can clearly see his weight was an issue as far as him turning it up, but he clearly outscored the guy. So maybe he sits down, refocuses on some things. He's able to fight five rounds effectively with an elite kickboxer. But he's got the KO pop, no question about that. So I look at that and I go, man, this is not a bad situation for Infusion that Jafar Wellness has won. Plus, Jafar Wellness stays generally healthy and he competes quite a bit. So between his time in Kunlun and his time with Infusion, they're going to have a star that they can move if they want to go in that direction. The only thing that Wellness is missing is Lazar brought in that fan base and he brought in that KO pop. Wellness does not have that, but he's still a strong, steady kickboxer who can get you out of there with low kicks if you're not blocking him and if he has enough time. Good stuff. Really fun card. It was their best card that they've put together. But there's nothing more important than having a moment. And the moment that this card produced was the third round of Muhammad Jiraiya versus Norda Bin Ma. That fight is just, it was just an epic tale. You know, four knockdowns in total. It's just a fun, fun fight. Great future for both guys. Gonna go ahead and hop into some lion fight now. Won't do the whole card, but I will do a lot of it. We'll go top down. Super welterweight title. Joe Nutterwhat gets a victory over Cedric Manhoef. I said at one period of time that I thought there's a good chance that Cedric Manhoef could pull off an upset. In the second round, he started to put the offense together that made that true. I can't remember if it was the second or third round. But, like, he had a moment where he was like, okay, time to bite down and throw hands. When he did it, he's a shorter guy than Nutterwhat, but he's fought heavier. So, like, he started throwing some good combination flow. He had scored some shots that really knocked Nutterwhat back. But Nutterwhat, his kickboxing flow with the body kicks, his subtle movement, it was clear victory for him. Cedric was always playing from behind. Cedric spent the whole fifth round trying to find a big-time KO shot. And Joe Nutterwhat put on, I can only describe it in a way, I think the best way to describe it is to tell you, when I first went to Thailand, I flew over there and I arrived at like 12 o'clock, 1 in the morning, something like that. And then I wanted to fly out to my friend's gym, but they didn't have a flight for a really long time. I was like, man, I don't waste a day waiting on the flight. So I decided to go to Fairtex. And so I got to Fairtex about 3 in the morning, and then I, you know, went to sleep for like 4 or 5 hours, and I went over and I was like, hey, I wonder what time the gym's opens up. Got to the gym and said, hey, what time, you know, you guys get started? And they say, oh, we start in 1 minute. If you want to, you can get in the first class. And I was like, I didn't fly out here to wait. I don't care for the fact that I've been flying for a day. I'm going to go ahead and hop in. I worked in the pads for like 2-3 rounds, and then I started to slow. And then when the guy see me slowing, he took off his tie pads and he put on his sparring gear and he just sparred me. That way we could move and have fun and I can get better, that kind of stuff, whatever. And literally, I can't stress to you enough, there was a period of time where he kept me away with teeps for like 2 minutes. When I watched him do that, I watched Nutterwhat keep Cedric Meinhof away with him with teeps for about 2 minutes. That's what it reminded me of. People have no idea how frustrating it is, how difficult it is if you go against a guy who's really good at teeps. Most people think you're good at teeps if you launch a teep and you take a guy to the other side of the ring. Not true. A really good guy can just disrupt your offense and disrupt your steps. That's what a guy who's good at teeps can do. So if you really want to see teeps used extremely well, just go to the last minute and a half of the Joe Nodowitz fight. And he just literally just keeps pecking away at Cedric Meinhof, just keeps pecking away. And Cedric's like, nothing I do is right here. Nothing I do is right. So it's like he was trying to get in a position to throw that big bomb. And there were a couple rounds where he let his hands go enough to get himself in this situation where you're like, man, Cedric's got a chance in this if he could just keep that kind of offense up. But I'm telling you, he had nothing that last minute. He just kept running into Joe's teeps, just kept, you know, punching air, just kept getting stopped, and he never even got close to scoring a significant shot in the last minute and a half. Good stuff by Joe Nodowitz. They had talked about Joe Nodowitz being all the rage. I think it's the commentary team kind of selling the champion. One thing that I remember Mike Chevelle saying, he was like, man, this guy's all the rage. He's, you know, one of the elite ties in the world. Doesn't even have, like, that super tie resume, but he's the guy to watch. Definitely take that stuff with the understanding of Lion Fight's responsibility is to sell their product and to sell their athletes. In no way would I say Joe Nodowitz is. If you were to be like, Steven, name 10 ties in the world that are just really doing work in Muay Thai, Joe, I don't think he would make my list. And in fact, I would say if Nodowitz, at his weight, were to go against a Bukau now, even an old Bukau, or Yotsen Klai, because I think he weighed at 152, 53 for this. So if they were to fight at, you know, 154 pounds, which is 70 kgs, which is, you know, where K1 had that weight class for a long time, I think that, you know, Ekpricha, I think that Yotsen Klai, I think that Bukau, I think all those guys beat Nodowitz in full rules Muay Thai. And I think that he's still a good fighter, but I think that they were kind of really selling Joe's skill set a little bit more, or excuse me, his resume worldwide. I felt like it was done a lot, and I was like, man, you know, I'll just address this by saying they were, Lion Fight was doing their job and promoting their champion. But I do think that those fights would be tough fights for him. But as far as getting a victory over Cedric Meinhof, who took this fight a little while ago, getting the victories that Joe's gotten, he's a fun guy to watch, and I would have loved to have seen what would happen. I would have loved to have seen what would happen if he fought Ken Sitsang Pignon, which is what this fight was originally supposed to be. I would have loved to see that fight. Really would have loved it, because I think that that would have been the level of tie that would have really told me where Nodowitz stood. Hopefully they can make that fight down the road. Good stuff by Joe, and I'll be remembering that minute and a half work of teep for quite some time because it took me to a dark place of when I got teeped all the time. Co-main event, Sergio Wilson gets the victory over Angjing Topic. And the interesting thing about this fight for me, I picked Topic to win the fight because I was like, he's going to be bigger and stronger. So even if Sergio scores, which he can, and Sergio Wilson, who I always felt is better suited for the 55 kg work weight class in K1, when they stood next to each other, it's so clear that Topic is just way bigger than he is. Like, Sergio Wilson's always been the smallest guy. You know, when he competed at 60 kgs and he was a champion of Infusion, I just looked at him and I was like, wow, this guy's a small guy out there putting in work, and then he ran into bigger, stronger kickboxers, and then that's kind of when he got to the end of his road. But Topic would score hands here and there, but really Sergio Wilson would score a really good time shot and a really good time body kick, and then Topic was like, let's go to the dumps. So he kept getting into the clinch positions, and Sergio Wilson would score solid knees in clinch spots because he, you know, he trains with Lucien Corbin, so they've got those knees down. He just didn't have the dump game down because, of course, if you've been kickboxing forever, you can't have a dump game. And Topic would just get in spots where he had one really slick, leg to the back of his Wilson's base kind of sweep. But most of the sweeps just happened when they were in clinch, and Topic just threw him down. Toppage started to play to close the distance with a kind of the step-up hop knee. It's something that you see in Thailand. Not necessarily a knee to score, but more of kind of like a feint where you pick the leg up, and you could do a lot of things with it. You could drop the leg and go 1-2. You could put the leg down and fire an inside leg, fire the outside leg. You use the lead leg to kind of sell the illusion of what's happening with this leg, and then you use a small bounce to close the distance. The problem with that is if you play with that bounce in front of someone, they can get off a counter, they can get off a shot before you get the leg down to do your offense. You've got to play with that bounce step when you're further away. It's like a small hop, but you want to play with it when you're at range so then you can move into it. A perfect example is earlier in the night, well, fine, I'm going to talk about next. Kai Hollenbach played with the bounce, and I saw him play with it, do a spinning back kick, play with it, do a kind of short leaping low kick. He played with it a little bit different. Toppage played with it, and Sergio said that he saw it for 2 rounds. He kept seeing it. He says, I'm going to try to throw the elbow. Because Sergio hadn't thrown an elbow to that point that I remember. He said, I'm going to try to time the elbow off that hop. That's what he said in the after fight interview. Beautiful stuff in the after fight interview to explain that. So he times it, comes through with the elbow, and the elbow scored so well right away. And then he put in some mean offense behind it. And then as soon as they look at it, you're like, dude, that cut is legit. It literally looked like some animal had just attacked Topic. And he knew right away. He was upset. But it's you feel it on your skin. So you know this is over. Wilson is the new title holder at 130 pounds. He's a smaller dude. So I don't know how long he'll be able to keep the title because it's just a matter of time before they bring in somebody at 130 who's bigger and stronger, who just plays a clinch dump game with him for 5 rounds to get the victory. But you give this guy some space, Wilson will be able to score on you. He'll be able to figure stuff out. He's a veteran. He's been in there a lot. He's been in there against a lot of elite guys. He's found effective offense, even in losing efforts. He's a veteran fighter. Super happy for him that he got this title, came over to America, gets the win. I love how excited he was, how he was, you know, there ringside to watch Cedric Manhoef. I love that he's been posting it on Facebook. You couldn't be happier for a guy. This is a guy who was a Showtime champion, now line fight champion, so that's a premier kickboxing championship. That's a Muay Thai championship, you know, organization Muay Thai championship. He's fought all over the world. Sergio Wilson looks back on his life and he says, I did it well. If Sergio Wilson opens up his own gym, he could have success because he's been at every level. He's fought all over the world. Good stuff by Sergio. I wish him all the best moving forward, and I'm curious to see who they bring in to fight him at 130. Andy Housen usually fights a lower weight, but I'd still take that fight if they put it together. Sergio Wilson's fun. Fun fight to watch. Kai Hollenbach put in an absolute demolition job against Justin Greskowitz. And the thing with it is, Justin, it's not that he didn't try, but and he came out and he was determined to find offensive scores, and I think he maybe buzzed Kai once in the round, and he's always been a tough, gritty dude who's gone. I mean, Justin's got one of my favorite fights of any American when he fought Liam Harrison, and Liam Harrison won that fight one-sidedly, but Justin fought him, and that means something. It means something to bring, and they brought him into Pennsylvania, so they brought in Liam Harrison into Pennsylvania for Justin to fight him, and I love that he put himself out there like that. You look at Justin's record, 32-16-3, it is a seasoned record of a veteran fighter. Like, that's what that is, you know? And I look at that and I go, man, I could only sit back and smile at how far this dude's come. You know, he's really put in great effort and gone out there and competed against some of the best in the world. He's just not skilled enough to beat elite guys. And worse, Kai Hollenbach, who is skilled, is also a monster in the weight division. He's such a strong dude. And literally, when Kai Hollenbach walked at Justin just through offense, I was like, Kai's like, he could just like maul him. Like, he's just so much bigger and stronger. Despite that, Kai kept playing with things. Weird judging again. The ref was saying some strange things. He broke up some clinches. And this was Coban, if I'm remembering correctly. So a guy who should have known better. But he broke up some clinches. He missed some downs. Kai Hollenbach put some offense together in close that, you know, caused downs with his hands and with his knees. And just Justin was allowed to stand, and they restarted it. Finally, in the last round, Kai Hollenbach just put too much offense together and got Justin out of there. Kai Hollenbach, there's only one person in the, I'd say, the Americas that I'd like to see him fight, and that would be Jonsi. I'd like to see him go against someone of that level. Anybody else who they mentioned to fight Kai Hollenbach, who fights in America or who fights in Canada, I just don't see it. You know, it'd been different if, you know, Shane Campbell was still kickboxing. Maybe that's another name that I'd suggest. But Kai Hollenbach, he needs to be fighting glory level 155ers. So a John C. kind of fight is something that I'd like to see from him. I just don't see any of these guys. They're just not big or strong enough to beat him. So he's just going to get into a place where he's just kind of going against guys that he's far superior to. And that does nobody any favors. We need to see Kai Hollenbach competing against guys who push his career. And Justin was a solid win, but that's kind of writing was on the wall before that happened. Kai Hollenbach's just too big, too strong. I really want to see him pushed. I don't know if a Lion Fight's going to be able to do that unless they bring in or have him fight a Yotsen Klai, which I would love. That would pull it off. You know, he needs to fight that level of guy. The America, we just don't have the athlete for him right now, and that's good. That's a good thing. It means you need to be going against international competition. I guess I'll talk about a couple more. Chris Masseri gets a KO victory over Nick Justine. I mean, it was pretty awesome, in terms of, like, he got him hurt, got in close, landed an elbow, and then really launched a really mean second elbow that put Nick Justine away. It just was awesome stuff. Masseri is 9-2 now. He's another guy who's kind of being brought up. One of the guys that, you know, him and Nick Justine was one of the guys too. Lion Fight's been using these guys on a regular basis. It's important to have names that people recognize. So I'd like this fight. It was good. Awesome KO. That elbow work was fun to watch. And then I guess I'll finish it with a 2-1 guy versus 0-2 guy. Bryce Lawrence also got a KO victory in this. Also, Ten Pao got a debut fight where he got a TKO stoppage. I want to mention these guys, but really, when you're talking about 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, not going to do whatever. That's not the level of fighter I want to talk about on the podcast. Once those guys get some victories and they get themselves mentioned into international notoriety, I'll start bringing them up a little bit more. But for the most part, I just wanted to give them that nod because, you know, they definitely deserve something because it was a night where there was a KO in every fight except for the main event. So we'll go ahead and wrap up the show with some glory talk. Going to go ahead and go through the, the glory cards in general are... I mean, they're good for the sport. They're gonna push the athletes that are the best in the world that we would say, you know. But really, I think I need to first point out. I think before I go into the glory situation, I want to talk about the Badr Hari situation because it's getting ugly. I was gonna end the show on that. And I think, you know what, never mind, I will end the show on that, because that could be a lot of talk. I don't know how much do I'll be able to give that without, you know, going on a little bit of a rant, but I'll just go ahead and jump into it. So I'll go glory first. First of all, the Glory Chicago card, I want to give credit because I thought that it was, I had trouble with my... Not everybody did, but I definitely had a little bit of difficulty with my, and I think it's because of the hacking, you know, it could be, I'm not 100%, but I had trouble watching the Glory undercard fight on my Fight Pass, which I always usually have success with, but, you know, sometimes when there's a really big event or somebody wants to watch something, that's when I'll have trouble, and it doesn't happen to everybody, but it happened to me. And I do want to say that I thought that the crowd was pretty decent for this event, and I did get to see the majority of the fights, and I do think that there were some interesting results that I'm you know, excited to see. But, man, it was a night where it's just Glory just keeps having trouble with their last fight on the card. Something is always happening to make that controversial or just... It hasn't left people with a good taste in their mouth after what was generally a pretty entertaining fight card before it. We'll go ahead and go into it. There's a lot more decisions than usual on this card, but, you know, we'll go ahead and hop right into it. Casey Green gets a victory over Daniel Morales. I was really impressed with Daniel Morales. I thought he won. I thought that he was doing a good job of kickboxing, scoring, and moving. He just doesn't have the KO pop for the division. So he's going to have to see what, you know, if weight-wise, if he can work himself down to the 70 kgs, he should consider it, because he's not strong enough as it is right now to score the kind of pop he needs to get separation on the card. Because he had Casey Green swinging at air a couple times and scoring inside of exchanges and subtle movements. But when Casey had his moments were like harder, thudding shots. He's a guy who fought at a bigger weight class once upon a time, you know, in his, you know, glory undercard days. But he's starting to get, you know, enough fights to build a resume for himself. He gets a 29-28 victory here. I did think Morales won the fight, but I was fine with Green getting it because he did throw the kind of offense that the judges remember. So he moves on to maybe another fight at the weight class down the road. We'll see what comes from him. Maybe he can fight Richard Abraham, who gets a victory over Paul Jacek. And Paul Jacek is older, and he came in with a pretty good resume, a lot of kickboxing fights, a lot of kickboxing victories. It looked like he's not physically strong enough, because everything he threw at it, Richard Abraham, didn't seem like it mattered. And Abraham just kind of like, you know, hands up, let's go. Threw some big heat. He was able to score down on Paulo, I want to say in the second round, 30-27 in favor of Richard Abraham, who moves his career. I think he's 8-4 now. So just a guy who fights in America on, you know, Muay Thai cards, kickboxing cards. We'll see if we get more from him down the road. Solid performance there. Guto Anasante gets a victory over Demario Dennis. Gets a spinning heel kick. Fight didn't even really get going for Dennis. As I mentioned before, he's a friend of mine. He trained with me before in the past. It was a scary KO. They had taken him out on a stretcher, but he was fine. They were just taking a precaution. He kind of posted something on social media later on the night, said, "Hey, I'm good." He's like, "I just got caught with something. I'll be back stronger." Guto Anasante, I still think he's a better fit at light heavyweight, but I would love it if he fought an Anderson Broderick Silva type next, because Silva's in that place where he's trying to work himself back into contention, and it's going to have to start with him just with activity. So they're both Brazilian, so we'll see what happens there. But Guto Anasante, I didn't really get to see much from him either. I just got to see the spinning hook kick. So he gets the highlight KO, but I want to see more kickboxing from him, because he is a pretty solid kickboxer. Would have loved to see that fight go a little bit longer. I definitely want to see more of Anasante. He's a talented guy that I watched on film, but I want to see more from him. Anderson Broderick Silva gets a one-sided victory over Maurice Green. The weird thing about it is, first of all, shout out to Maurice Green for taking the fight and for his toughness. Clearly, you know, we're talking about a guy who's got like 6 fights and 5 of them are KO victories, and just tall for the weight class. I mean, he's heavyweight, so, you know, who cares if he's tall for the weight class, but he's got sneaky power, and sometimes when he throws a shot, didn't look like it generated enough heat on it, and it has the effect of a shot that did generate heat. He moves well, like as far as the switch stance and so on, for the guy his size. Like, he looked like he'd be less coordinated. So in some of his wins, he's kind of had like, wow, it surprised me that he was able to move that way. And wow, it surprised me. With that said, when I saw he was going against Anderson Broderick Silva, I was like, there's no way he's winning this fight. Like, Silva's just a better, more skilled kickboxer. The thing that impressed me was his toughness, because Silva had him hurt with the low kick. The second low kick put a grimace on Green's face, and he just continued to low kick him and continued to low kick him. And I think he scored a down. I didn't get a down in the first round, if I'm remembering correctly, but Green makes it back to his corner. I remember they put the camera in Green's corner, and then they've got the ice, and puts the ice in his leg, and he goes, "Where did he kick you?" And then Maurice Green said, "He kicked me all over." And it just kind of like, so then later in the next round, they just put the ice on the back of his shoulder, because they're like, what good is this going to do? I can't ice one area. He's just going to have to pull, bite down his mouthpiece and fight through. Silva was able to score downs. I think he scored 2 downs in the second, 1 down in the third. Final scorecards were 30-25. Shout out to Green for making it the distance, because, again, wasn't anything for Anderson Broderick Silva. Like, it wasn't impressive to me. He did what he was supposed to do. You know, he's supposed to go out there and be a superior kickboxing. So to me, it wasn't impressive what he did. It was professional what he did. He went out there and he took care of a guy who he was better than, and he moves on to bigger and better things. That's what you're supposed to get from Anderson Broderick Silva. He did his work. Green did a good job of just staying tough. I mean, his skill level wasn't there. He didn't have the low kick endurance. Probably didn't have the sparring. I know he didn't have anybody who could come in and be Anderson Broderick Silva, that level of kickboxing, not in that state that I know of. Because I believe he's in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere as far as getting kickboxing and mixed martial arts talent in general. So we'll see more from Green moving forward, but he should be, and I fight him and DeMario Dennis. It was kind of a fight that they should make the next time they come to the States. They're around the same place. And Anderson Broderick Silva, it's about moving forward. I mentioned the Gute and Asante fight, but I'll pretty much take him fighting anybody. Anderson Broderick Silva versus Jafar Wilnes would be a lot of fun. Joe Schilling wins 30-27 over Mike Lemaire. The thing that, for me, about this fight, and I mentioned when I watched the Lemaire fight before, I was like, man, he doesn't seem like he has the fluidity or the volume or the cardio to be able to fight and have success over a Joe Schilling. And I posted it on Twitter, and then Joe Schilling was like, I said he couldn't beat a Artem Levin or a Schilling. And of course, Schilling, him and Artem Levin are at it, and Schilling was like, Artem doesn't have the cardio either, that kind of deal, whatever. Schilling, I thought the difference in this fight was he so comfortably gets into his offensive flow so much better than Mike Lemaire. Like, he can get started so much quicker. He believes in throwing in his combinations. He believes in finding his kicks. He believes in finding offense with both stances. He can play it strong and upright like a Thai style with a tall guy's body, or he could play it with a lot of movement. Joe Schilling, he's got a weird flow about him, and I think that's always made him him. Like, I've never thought that he's been a, like, Gokhan Saki, I know what I'm getting from him. I know what I'm getting from Andy Sauer. Joe Schilling gives me a little bit of everything, and just for a little bit. He's always going to be, like, susceptible to hits because his chin gets a little high when he looks for offense, but Lemaire didn't even get close to outscoring him in any of the rounds, and as Schilling got a little bit tired towards the end of the second round, Lemaire couldn't take advantage of it in the third. Schilling just was able to step to the side. Lemaire was trying to hype himself up and keep going. He just couldn't catch Schilling. And Schilling did a good job of winning all the rounds. And at the end of it, shout out to Vinny Shorman, whose brother is having family difficulties with the health of his brother and so on. And Schilling kind of did a shout out to that for Vinny Shorman. So shout out to Joe Schilling for doing that. That's good stuff. And Schilling gets a win on a fight that he took pretty much 2 weeks, 3 weeks out. So good for Joe Schilling, who's going to be fighting for both Glory and the Bellator kickboxing as well. Wayne Barrett gets a victory over Robert Thomas. I thought Thomas was possibly going to win this one. Wayne Barrett's got all the athleticism to do this, to get kickboxing victories. He's got the movement. He just has to get kickboxing flow down a little bit more. He gets a victory over Robert Thomas, who's, I've heard nothing but good things about Robert Thomas, who is a, you know, have gloves, will travel kind of fighter. He'll get out there, put himself out there against the best in the world, and really push to see himself improve as an athlete and grow. But he struggles with beating some of the higher talent, you know. So you look at Joe Schilling, you look at, you know, Wayne Barrett, he's losing to some of the better guys in North America. So he's just going to have to keep working on getting his kickboxing flow down and possibly have more success down the road, because he does have solid kickboxing skill set, but his kickboxing IQ and his, fight resume for, you know, total volume of rounds will produce more kickboxing efforts where he gets his hands raised. But Wayne Barrett, the athleticism, the scoring, took the day, and he gets a victory. Dustin Uchobi gets a victory over Carl Roberson. I was guilty of giving Carl Roberson a little bit too much credit for the fight with Jerome LeBanner, which he pretty much had LeBanner KO'd, and then they gave LeBanner like half a minute, 2 minutes to like recover, and then they restarted the fight, not giving Carl Roberson, you know, his victory. I was like, man, Carl's going to come out, smaller weight class, he's going to come out and have a lot of success. Dustin Uchobi and the pressure on the offense was just too much for Carl Roberson. He gets a KO at the end of the third round, right at the very end of the last round. It's just, Jacoby's just getting better all the time. And now, and I'll talk about it more, as Dustin Uchobi, he defeats Wayne Barrett by KO. And again, it's one of those weird moments where people can't seem to figure out, like, it didn't seem like it came from one particular shot. It seemed like maybe Wayne Barrett was just frustrated. Uchobi needs a step up now. He needs a Joe Schilling. He needs a, they're probably going to give him, you know, Simon Marcus. But he needs Simon Marcus, Artur Levent. He needs that level of guy. But we really got to see something more from him. You know, because he's been winning these tournaments. He's done a great job of growing and getting himself better. And the big key for him, because I think Dustin Jacoby has the most glory fights in the last of anybody since they bought K1. I wouldn't be surprised. Excuse me. Since they bought the K1 roster, since they bought it's Showtime's management team, since that happened, and Glory's been putting together the best athletes in combat sports in one fight card. Since that's happened, it's clear to me, and I mean clear to me, that Dustin Jacoby has had the most fight opportunities, but a lot of those are one-week notice fights, you know, flying wherever, and he wasn't giving himself the opportunity to grow and get better as a kickboxer. But for the kid who just took a overnight tournament and won that tournament to win $50,000, for him to go from there, you know, from being a complete MMA guy before to focusing on kickboxing to having success now, it's really, really cool to see where he is right now. So shout out to Dustin Jacoby. We'll see more from you moving forward. Giga Chikadze gets a victory over Kevin Van Noorstrand. Kevin Van Noorstrand was a replacement fight, but still, I thought that he put up decent effort. Giga was just better, just a better kickboxer, scored more clean, effective offense throughout. Giga's the guy who's like, all right, what are they going to do with you moving forward? You know, you've got Adam and Czech is the king of your division. You had a okay fight in your first outing, but man, you know, Masab Amrani, there's some fights I like to see Giga get in. I don't see him as elite as of yet, but he does have the skill set to really push. We finished the night, as Glory usually does, with something really, really weird. The fight between, I mean, if you see, you had to have known, if you've seen any of these guys fight, Simon Marcus and Artem Levin, when I was putting together the highlight video for last year, and I was putting their fight together, I go, man, this is not a fun fight to watch. It definitely was grimy, and there's a lot of clinch, and it got ugly. It was not aesthetically pleasing at all. And a lot of it, I thought, because I interviewed Simon Marcus before that fight, because Simon had won a tournament earlier, and to give him that opportunity. One of the things that Simon mentioned was, he said, Artem Levin, you know, I'm known as the clincher, but he initiated a lot of the clinches. And when I watched it, sure enough, he did. But because of their styles, because both guys, one guy can score clean offense and move out of the way, the other guy can score power offense, when both of them are of the mentality that this offensive shot's going to do it, and if it doesn't, there probably won't be another offensive shot afterwards, I'm going to close the distance before that shot can land, a lot of those clinches just kind of happen just because of their styles. The thing that made it interesting was the ref, you know, seemed to be strictly going after Artem Levin for a lot of it. And I think the moment that kind of sent things towards the end was Levin was clearly pushed out of the ropes. And when he came back from in the ropes, I mean, this is clear. This is not debatable. But Al Wickers, after he's pushed out of the ropes, he helps him back in, and then he starts doing a 10 count, saying that he was knocked out of the ropes. And it was so clear that no strike had landed when this had happened, just to me. Now, maybe I need to look at it again. I'm just going off my initial review and the highlights that I saw on it. I kept saying to myself, what did he see here to make this call? So after that, after taking a point from Levin, Levin had had enough. And he said he called it. He quit during the fight, so they called a disqualification. And here's my thing. One, the reason why I like it is because it puts the judge to call or the ref to call. We need more things where it's like, all right, ref, you're the star. All right, I'm leaving. All right, you know what I'm saying? Now, again, he's a champion of the world. So you're like, man, you don't want to leave your championship on this game. But sometimes if you stay, you allow the game to keep happening. You know, you allow this thing to happen. If you feel like things are so one-sided against you and you feel like you're no longer at a point where you can compete and win, and you feel like you're going against two people in there, if you stop fighting, clearly people are going to jump on you for stop fighting. But then they're going to have to go back to, why would he stop fighting? And then you've got to go towards the judging of Al Wickers. And it's weird because Al's been in this game for a lot. I'm saying Al. I'm pretty sure it's Al. But Wickers has been in this game for a long time. He, you know, back when I kickboxed, I've got a picture of me winning a fight and him lifting my hand. If you look at my Facebook, he's been doing this game for a long time. And this just, it's just such a weird thing, but between him and, you know, just some of the judging that they've had in the past, with you know, Stefano is another guy, it's happening a lot, but because the fights end and they go to the cards, it usually gives him an escape. Usually you get to talk about him bad in the moment, but it gives him an escape from the moment. But man, I'm telling you, when Levin left this fight when he was frustrated. Most people were like, this is the ref's fault. Like, they didn't feel like it was Artem Levin's fault. They were like, he just couldn't. I mean, he did this so one-sidedly against one guy that that's what the guy felt he had to do to get out of that situation. He said, I got to escape this. This isn't doing me any good. So I've got no problem with Levin making the decision that he made, because in the end, he's the one out there competing. But again, Glory has got to get. I think I might do a write-up for Liver Kick. I haven't wrote for them in a long time. But they're struggling with the way their fights, their cards are ending. Because you get the decision, even though Nicky Holtz got the victory, you could really make the argument that it was a close fight. I can see it being a close fight, but man, when I look at that card and I look at how that event played out and I'm looking at the offense, it was clear to me, as it was clear in their first fight, the person who scored the most volume of offense when I look at that fight was Mirko Gronart. He scored the most volume of offense. So when I look at how the situation with how this fight kind of, you know, or how that Nicky Holtzman got the victory there, it left a sour taste in people's mouths. And a lot of people were saying robbery at the end of the fight card. A lot of people were saying robbery at the end of Siddichai and Robin Van Roosmalen. It's not good to end your fight cards on those kind of notes. Jacoby, I'm just trying to remember when Schilling beat, I can't remember if that was the last fight or not, but I think that one was stopped on the stool because of a cut. The last fights of these last few cards have just left people thinking, man, almost. Now, this card was just okay. This was not one of the better Glory cards. It was an okay card. Their next month card is banging. Excuse me. Their next week card is banging. But, like, they need a night where people have, like, a walk-off type moment. They need that, you know, game winner in penalty kicks. They need that walk-off home run. They need that touchdown in the last second. They need people to just remember the last moment of their card well. That's been the struggle that they've had. And maybe they'll get that next week. I'll finish the show by talking about the Badr Hari situation. The Badr Hari situation is made unique by, you know, many, many different factors. But this is probably, it's got to be said, it's probably one of the scarier moments in my history of being a fan of combat sports. It's just such a, I've seen brawls, I've seen all kinds of things happen, but for Cohen Everink to be murdered in his home just blows me away. Badr Hari is in a long line of elite kickboxers who emerge from the Dutch kickboxing scene. So after you get your Peter Arts's, after you get your Ernesto Hoos, Rob came in before them, you say, okay, who's going to be the next? Who's going to be the next heavyweight? Then you get Remy Bonjasky. Remy Bonjasky gets K-1 World Grand Prix gold. Then you go, who's going to be the next guy after him? The next guy after him was supposed to be Badr Hari. Badr Hari has every gift. He was not a heavyweight size when he started fighting as a heavyweight. He's about 88 kgs. And he just really technical when he wanted to be with his 1-2 switch kick, with his jab, low kick, hook, low kick. He had KO pop. He had the charisma. He had the look. He had the response in the mic. The scene where he goes crazy in the back of the K-1 event, that is awesome for K-1 because it was a memorable moment. It was more memorable than the fight. People forget that what he was complaining about was he went down in the fight and he got kicked when he was down. Again, not a great ref call there, but they called it a KO on him. And later he said, hey, I was just being, like, he admits that I was just, in his words, being a pussy. He said, I was just laying there and allowing that to happen because I was trying to get a point taken from him. But when I blew up in the back, he said, it was all just a result of just frustration for just things going on in my life and so on, whatever. But this was a guy who, even after that kind of a moment, came back. He was owning Ruslan Kharif. They were different people after that fight. He owned Ruslan Kharif after those fights. Well, I won't say that. The next fight was a good back and forth. Kharif dropped him, and then he got up and he knocked Ruslan Kharif out. And then when they fought after that, then it was a one-sided win for Badr Hari over Ruslan Kharif. So he owned him as the time went on. But the skill set, His fight with Gabe Fortosa is still one of the better kickboxing performances ever. He had the crowd. He had the love of the people. He had the situation with Romy Ojowski, and the foot stomp. Comes back afterwards to a huge crowd in France. Gets victory there over Tony Gregory. And then just inconsistency. All of a sudden he has a situation where he gets into an argument and then he gets into a fight with Cohen Everink, a guy of financial, you know, influence. You know, he's a guy who's got money. So when Badr Hari got into a situation where he got into a fight at a bar, all of a sudden that guy didn't remember who it was that it hit him. And Badr Hari is a 6'7" Moroccan guy. You know him if it was him. You would know him. But at the same time, that guy changed it and changed his mind. But this guy, Cohen Everink, was not going to change his mind. He knew who Badr Hari was. That situation played out. Badr Hari goes to prison for 10 months. His body's completely changed afterwards. Starts to try to get himself back in shape. Takes a fight here and there. But he still got this thing looming over him. So then it sounded like we were finally at the end of the story. Sounded like they, after the trial, he had done so many months served, he's going to have to return, probably do about another 10 months in prison and then do the rest, maybe on house arrest or something like that, whatever. But he had served a lot of it already. And then the news that the guy who he attacked in the fight dies in his home. The situation, as I hear it, is they broke into his home and he went down to confront whoever it was, and then he was killed by the person. I don't know what's going on in the Dutch media right now, but it couldn't be good because they had already been against kickboxing. And as I mentioned before, kickboxing is banging in Holland right now. It's just this, it's always been big, but I keep seeing small shows say that they're selling out and people are still supporting their athletes and they're still coming to these events. But when this happens, he's not one of the biggest stars anymore, but he still could be. Just an elite, awesome athlete, when he has this sort of a downfall where clearly people are like, even if he didn't arrange this guy to get killed, people around him thought it'd be a good idea, would make them look better, would make them look a certain way if they went after Badr Hari if they went after Badr Hari's enemies for him. So, there'd been rumors about, of course, he'd been working for some questionable promoters, and he'd always been around people from different crime organizations and so on. But Badr Hari is just, and if you're a kickboxer, it just happens naturally. You'll see those guys at the event. But they'd been jumping on Badr Hari about that more than anything. But the thing that's different with the Badr situation and other athlete situation is it seems to be getting more violent outside of him. And whether it's of his doing or not, it keeps happening. Another situation happens here. There was the accusation of him wanting to blow up a girlfriend's house. There was having a bomb. There was an accusation of, like I said, these other fights and so on. So if you look at other athletes who've had these difficulties, it's never a good thing when you see that it's turning into violence outside of the combat sports world. And the scary thing about Hari's situation is he's so beloved that it's starting to pop up on social media, and I saw that Dave Walsh had mentioned it or whatever. People are now starting to praise the killers for going after this guy because he took out one of the better stars in kickboxing. It's just nasty. It's so crazy that we're so in today's world of, I'm here in the States, so we'll see some video pop up every week of some guy getting beat up by the cops. In the 90s, one guy got caught on camera getting beat up from the cops, and it turned into a riot. It was a big deal. Now we're desensitized to it so much that when people die in front of us, we go straight to our political views and our views on interests. So in this situation, people are so desensitized to the idea of Cohen Everink dying in his home with his children around him that they are of the point where they're like, Badr Hari is the man. He should have worked it out. Or it was just a simple fight. They should have worked it out. Or I'm glad he's dead. It's so scary that we're at that point. Please, kickboxing, don't be that. Don't be that ever. Let the world be what it's going to be. If it wants to be a social media war against itself, let it be that way. There's nothing. We don't want to engage in that. I want us as a community to be like, all right, I just watched the Infusion card the other day. Christian fighters, Muslim fighters, secular fighters, like people, female fighters. Just it was a complete example of what the kickboxing world should be. We should always reflect a loving world of people who just have different faiths and different ideas and things. But it should never turn into violence towards people outside of the kickboxing combat sport. So I'm hoping that we don't become that crowd. But in today's day and age, I just see it happening. So I'm a Christian guy. Most of you guys know that. But I have love for anybody who's watching this podcast. I don't care where you're coming from, what your background is, whether you are a person of faith or not of faith. I want you to enjoy the kickboxing combat sport with me. So thank you for listening. God bless everybody and have a good one. Peace.